And welcome back to another episode of Radio New Bloom. Today we're going to be talking with William Yang, a journalist, writer, and photographer living in Taipei. William has written for BuzzFeed News, The Guardian, The Independent, and most recently Deutsche Welle News. He covers many topics related to Taiwan and East Asia in general, including reporting on topics of interest in China and Hong Kong. We're going to be talking today about the state of the Taiwanese media in 2020, both in the context of the increased international attention being given to Taiwan because of COVID, and also because of the major developments in the way East Asia is being covered by the international press recently. And in some ways, this is also a follow-up to our previous episode on discussion of the national security law in Hong Kong. In particular, I spoke with William about how this has left much of the international media in Hong Kong in a kind of legal and political limbo, as it's unclear to many of them how their operations might be restricted or even if they can continue to operate here. We want to tie all this back to Taiwan, and I think that William's experience in media really helps me get a clear picture on what the implications of this shift could be, and I hope you enjoy listening to this episode. I'm on today with William Yang. William, could you go ahead and tell us a bit about yourself for our listeners who may not know you?
Hi, so my name is William Yang, and I'm the East Asia correspondent for Germany's international broadcaster, Deutsche Welle. And I have been in the industry for about, this is my seventh year, and I started my career in Taiwan. I'm a Taiwanese, and I'm also currently based in Taiwan, which is the East Asia Bureau for DW.
Awesome. Thank you for being on the show, William. I actually wanted to talk to you today about the Taiwanese media. You've been working in this space for a while now, and you kind of know some of the trends that are happening lately. So I wanted to get your sense of some of the things going on in the world, how they're affecting the Taiwanese media sphere, and sort of what the next steps in the future could be. So I want to start off by talking about the COVID-19 crisis. I think that that's really a lot of what's on people's minds lately. Taiwan has been getting a lot of international attention due to COVID-19. What was the state of the Taiwanese media environment in 2020 as this started, and how has all this international attention affected Taiwanese media during COVID?
So the initial media response to the emergence of these SARS-like pneumonia cases in China, at the time when the whole world was not even aware of the, you know, scale and also the severity of this whole pandemic, was that it set off an alarm, making a lot of comparisons between this pandemic with the 2003 SARS pandemic, because that was one of the closest pandemic that hit Taiwan really hard and made dozens of people die from the pandemic as a result. So the government also immediately make use of the media attention to kind of like start educating and spreading a public information about what to do and the current status, and because of the experience from dealing with SARS. So the government and also the media was able to form a very well, very good and solid partnership to inform the public and make sure that this information is being reduced to the lowest possible degree. And later on, as the virus starts spreading to other parts of the world, and Europe, the US, and different parts of the world begin to fall victim to the pandemic and had to, you know, force themselves into shutdowns and lockdowns, Taiwan's relatively normal pace of life and way of life suddenly become a very newsworthy topic for international media outlets. So there were suddenly a lot of interest from different international publications from all over the world, reaching out to journalists here who are available to write or do radio, TV interviews in foreign languages or in English mostly, to explain about Taiwan's strategies. And then obviously, if any of the listeners are very familiar with Taiwan's media environment and also the landscape, they should know that it's always a very whenever there is a huge growing international attention on Taiwan, the local media would respond. So what that means is that they would translate and report about how other countries' media are reporting about Taiwan. So during probably March and April, and even leading up to May, the entire a lot of the space of the Taiwanese media are occupied by how great, you know, Taiwan has been praised in different countries' media outlets, and how well different countries or different governments begin to gain more interest in interacting and exchanging experiences combating the COVID-19 with Taiwan. And I would say the attention and also the positive media coverage from international media outlets really translate also well into how the government utilize these positive coverage to you know, create a much more positive image for itself. So this is a very interesting dynamic where the international media coverage serves as a base for the local media to suddenly pumping out a lot of positive coverage about Taiwan itself, which is relatively unusual comparing to what, you know, the Taiwanese general public is usually used to reading or consuming in the media outlets. And then these public, you know, positive local coverage would then be used again by the government as their, you know, proof that they have been doing a great job at combating the pandemic and how this these experiences are helping Taiwan to really up, you know, like really upgrading or like lifting up its international profile overall. Yeah.
So speaking as somebody who has a lot of local experience and who works really in depth with the local media there, do you think that the response among the people to the government's effort to promote Taiwan has been successful? Particularly you talking about the local media reporting on the attention that the international media is giving Taiwan and the government sort of using that to bolster its own policies and image. How do you think that people have responded to this? Do they feel like the government's done a good job at handling it?
Yes, I would say a lot of the times how this dynamic works is that as long as the praise is coming from international media outlets or international organizations, suddenly these praises would be treated with a lot more I would say a lot more interest, and also people with the credibility of these praises would suddenly also be viewed be highly approved by the general public. So we see actually Taiwan's approval rating skyrocketed just during the few months right after her re-election victory in January. That was exactly right before the pandemic started spreading to other parts of the world. And she did, in fact, seize the opportunity and respond very quickly. And that really makes the difference between how she started in her second term versus her first term. So in a way, the pandemic, in fact, offered a perfect opportunity for her and her team to actually showcase their ability and the depth of their expertise in managing a public health crisis like this, where almost all countries around the world except Taiwan have been struggling to deal with waves and waves of, you know, new surges of cases. And so far, Taiwan has not witnessed that. And that is really all credits to her team and how she was also able to, you know, channel those positive handling of the pandemic into her political, I think, capital. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, as someone who has been working to report on Taiwan for a couple of years as well, this really is a big moment for Taiwan. I personally can't think of a time recently that I have seen Taiwan getting this much attention internationally. And I want to talk a little bit some more about the international trends that are driving some of the media attention as well. So besides just the pandemic, we've seen some of the tensions rising between the Chinese and American media, sort of shaping the landscape in regards to Taiwan and to other East Asian developments too. Particularly, I'm talking about the Chinese government expelling journalists from American outlets, such as the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post from China back in March of this year. So this itself was actually seen as a response to the U.S. government's own expulsion of Chinese media outlets earlier. And for our listeners that don't know, what happened earlier this year is the Trump administration curbed the number of visas for Chinese journalists from five Chinese media outlets that were deemed to be propaganda outlets. So a lot of these were major state-controlled outlets such as Xinhua, which is a major news agency in China. Some of these institutions, and speaking about the American newspapers that saw their journalists expelled from China, including even the New York Times, relocated some of their people to Taiwan. Do you feel that these U.S.-China media conflicts are affecting the regional press environment in East Asia? And particularly, how do you feel like this is going to impact Taiwan and Taiwanese media?
So the definitely the repercussion and also the tit-for-tat, ongoing tit-for-tat between the U.S. and China on the topic of press freedom has been really creating a lot of anxieties and also uncertainties among colleagues in the mainland. And when the news first came out that China is going to expel the 13 journalists from Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, and New York Times back in March, so I recently was elected as the vice president of the Taiwan Foreign Correspondents Club. And our club, or at least myself, immediately saw an opportunity to capitalize on this by direct. So I actively reached out to all three bureau chiefs of the publications because we follow each other on Twitter, and I saw this as an opportunity for maybe invite them, in private to just express our goodwill and let them know that in case that they are considering moving or relocating their staff to Taiwan, our club and our team and committee members are ready to help in, either by connecting them to the government or helping to liaise between them and some of the more bureaucratic process and helping them to, get through the bureaucracy or bureaucratic system as smooth as they can. But I think, as we have seen over the last few years, during Tsai Ing-wen's first administration and first term, her government is very good and savvy at, managing and seizing on changing international tide. So this time around, it was also no difference. The foreign minister, Joseph Wu, immediately gave an interview to Reuters and specifically responded to the news that, of the explosion of the journalists, and said that the democratic Taiwan would very much welcome these journalists in case that they would consider coming to Taiwan and relocate to Taiwan and work from Taiwan to cover China. And just so because traditionally, journalists who are denied visa in China would be relocated to usually the regional headquarters of most of these international publications in Hong Kong. But the difference this time around is that the Chinese government also made it very specific that all 13 journalists from the United States, from these three publications, would also be banned from working as journalists in Hong Kong and Macau. So that technically ruled out a lot of the traditional backup plans and plan Bs. And so, when I reached out, the publications bureau chiefs were immediately very responsive, and they, also proactively reached out to the foreign minister just because he openly invited them. And that ended up turning into now we have four New York Times journalists being based here, but still doing their best to cover China as they do. And this trend, we still don't know how long they're going to be here, or whether this will just become the new reality that more journalists in China would eventually have to adapt to the new reality that whenever they do some write about some very sensitive topics and upset the Chinese government, they would have to be ready for an indefinite period of time where they will have to cover China from Taiwan. And as someone who does that on a daily basis, that's what I do every day. In fact, most of my coverage is about China these days, and I write very little about Taiwan. It suddenly becomes a very interesting dynamic, and we see how once these journalists move here, they realize that in fact it is not as difficult as they think, or it is not as unmanageable as they think to cover China from Taiwan, because some of them did that when they were based in Hong Kong waiting for their Chinese visa to be approved. And so it was just, getting back to the older, more traditional way of working on China stories when their access to the country was pending. And so I think realizing the fact that covering China is a possibility, and in fact it works in Taiwan, would probably give the international media outlets some more imagination about Taiwan as a location or a potential location for their base. But again, we don't know how severe the situation in both China and Hong Kong would be, and specifically the deterioration of the state of press freedom. And for the local media outlets, in some private exchanges between us and the foreign minister, I think everyone in Taiwan is in fact thinking that more international media presence would in fact help to hopefully boost the overall quality of the local media as well, because traditionally the media the quality or the media literacy or the ethics, media professional ethics here in Taiwan has been known as very sketchy or very unbalanced. There are very good outlets with very high standards, but most of the TV stations or online media or the major publications, the level of attention that they pay to quality or detail has been dropping over the years. And so the foreign minister was saying if more and more international media outlets decided to base some of their staff, if not the entire bureau, in Taiwan, it could still have a very positive impact on helping Taiwan to improve its status and also the overall media environment.
That's really great that you're talking about these trends, because they're something that I want to get back to, particularly on how the relocation of some of these more international outlets could affect not just the way that the international media sees Taiwan, but then also maybe even the local Taiwanese media as well. But before we talk about that, you brought up the inability for some of these outlets to move their people to Hong Kong. So as you know, Hong Kong has traditionally been seen as the free speech base for a lot of East Asian reporting. You brought this up earlier. A lot of international media outlets, international companies and big organizations in the media traditionally have located there in order to report on China and other places. This is becoming harder and harder for many of these companies to do. So as you know, and we've talked about on this show before, the passage of the national security law in Hong Kong recently has made it dangerous for some of these international media operations to continue there, particularly increasingly difficult for them to report on, like you said, some sensitive topics. Local public outlets too, such as Radio Television Hong Kong, have seen their activities pressured because of the stringent rules put in place by the national security law. So speaking about the changes that are going on in Hong Kong, particularly in the area of free speech and of foreign organizations, what are some of the dangers that the Hong Kong press, both the local press and international media located in Hong Kong, might face?
So specifically, there are certain clauses in the national security law, and the details that have been revealed last week, that really worried a lot of the media observers in Hong Kong. Specifically, there was a clause that allowed or pledged that the Hong Kong government and the central, the national security agency set up by Beijing would, basically enhance their management of foreign foreign organizations and also foreign media outlets. And the vague wording again was in the eyes of many experts and also journalists, experienced journalists who have been covering China for a long time, would know that the intentional vagueness of the wording over there is in fact going to leave room for the government in the future to interpret or to adjust the actual clause or the effect of the clause based on the situation in reality, which is saying that, you know, the vagueness of the wording is to give the government more power to rule the particular cases and always in their favor. And that already is very alarming to most of the international media outlets, because what does the so-called, you know, enhanced or increased management of media outlets mean? You know, does it mean that they will start censoring the content, or are they also going to use are they also going to use visa cancellation as a threat to any media outlet dare to write in favorable articles or coverage about both the Hong Kong or the Chinese government? So that's one thing. And the other clause that has been also raising a lot of the friction or concern among the press community in Hong Kong is the Clause 29, which specifically touched on the topic of basically saying that, you know, anyone spreading hatred against the Chinese or Hong Kong government will also be punishable under the law. And what also that means is that, how do you define spreading hatred? And again, that is, and also that particular clause also has more details about individuals being considered as, leaking national intelligence or sensitive data or content to foreign governments or foreign organizations would also be viewed as punishable under the law. So all these, all these vague laws and also the very draconian wordings, and it reminded observers about how China, Beijing, is retaliating against foreign press or foreign media inside China, and how they control access to China, so that they can always have a they can always wrestle back the rhetoric, or the the way to they can always control the narrative whenever they need to, in case that, you know, some narrative is getting out of their hand. They can always use visa cancellation or threatening to expel journalists from certain foreign media outlets as a way to spread fear among the foreign correspondence community. So when even the old safe haven Hong Kong is no longer safe and has officially been included into the orbit of the Chinese government, then they need to look, you know, they need to have some backup plans to look beyond their traditional plans. So maybe Singapore is another option in the region, and some journalists being expelled from China have also in fact relocated to Seoul, because a lot of the China stories are oftentimes connected to what's happening on the Korean Peninsula. So this then forms a very interesting triangle of Taiwan, Taipei, Seoul, and Singapore being the three possible, takeover spots in the future, in case the situation in Hong Kong and China continue to deteriorate to a point where foreign media outlets can no longer afford to have the biggest number of their foreign staff or regional staff in these places.
Excellent. Yes. And I would encourage all of our listeners to check out William's work. I know that you recently published an article on free speech implications for the national security law in DW. So anybody who wanted to find out more about William's thoughts on that and what's going on in Hong Kong, I would encourage you to visit that site. I want to talk a little bit about what you just said about growing alternatives to reporting from China in Hong Kong. So you talked about Seoul, Singapore, and Taipei, and particularly I want to talk about Taipei. Now, I thought it was a great point that you brought up earlier that a lot of journalists who had access to China, and as we know, access to China is a valve that the Chinese government turns on and off as needed to control the narrative, like you said. Now these journalists who normally would have had access to on-the-ground information are having to report from afar in Taiwan. Do you see Taiwan growing as an alternative to a free speech center in East Asia, as some of these other regional hubs like Hong Kong maybe face some pressures? And particularly as more journalists maybe potentially move to Taipei, instead of just maybe reporting on what's developing in China, do you think that Taiwan itself will get more international media attention as a free speech country in East Asia?
That's definitely a possibility because of the, you know, rate of deterioration in places that were traditionally as the hub for international media outlets, specifically Hong Kong. And I think because of so many parallel comparison that has taken place between Hong Kong and Taiwan over the last year due to the protest and also the relevancy between Taiwan and Hong Kong in this ongoing, I think, dynamic. People are beginning, or at least even international media outlets are beginning to have more appetite for stories from Taiwan. So it is no longer just about politics or national defense, national security, and sometimes cultural stories like bubble tea or like marriage equality. Like, there will be more room for more normalized discussion about Taiwan. And also, there will be more chances and spaces that the international media outlets will be willing to spare to look at Taiwan. But of course, there's always going to be a so-called connection to other, traditional huts, like hotspots, or like the attention grabber of the region. So, like, it's not going to immediately see Taiwan being as the only country or the sole focus in most of the coverage, but there will be more relevant coverage about a specific location, but then Taiwan will be brought in because of the growing relevance and also the growing attention about Taiwan's potential of becoming the next destination. And I think also the excitement that comes with, you know, then what can Taiwan offer and how will these how will the reality of re-transplanting these organizations into Taiwan look like? Is it going to remain the same as when they are based in Hong Kong? Or in fact, will foreign media suddenly recognize or discover the very unknown, but rather a very surprising side of Taiwan that suddenly will become, grow the new appetite of the international media outlets about Taiwan? So I think this is definitely going to be positive for Taiwan no matter what. As we talked about, there's nothing for Taiwan to lose, but as long as Taiwan and its government is willing to play a very proactive role in continuing to highlight Taiwan's strength in these scenarios, then there's always going to be chances that, you know, Taiwan will be viewed favorably when the time comes that international media outlets will have to make decisions about what would be their alternative or backup plan or even just the next move.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier too, and I think that it bears repeating that people's literacy in what's going on in East Asia and their familiarity with Taiwan has really picked up to a level that we haven't really seen over the past few years. And I think that all of these factors sort of combined really raise its international profile. You talked about the way that it'll affect not just the international media there, but the local media as well. I wanted to circle back around. I know that you have talked a little bit about moving forward, what the government can do there to encourage this movement. And you talked about some of the plans that they put into place. But as we sort of, you're still dealing with the effects of the pandemic and Taiwan as a model, as we're working through what's going on between the United States and China, as we're working through what's going on in Hong Kong, what do you think that the Tsai administration can do to encourage the relocation of international media organizations to Taiwan and to make Taiwan into a place where international media organizations would consider as a first stop destination?
I think what they can and should definitely consider is to make the immigration policies more flexible, because as we know, Taiwan, in fact, has one of the most conservative way of vetting candidates, and qualifications sometimes, in fact, is rather ridiculous. For a lot of the foreigners who hope to stay in Taiwan, they need to either already have 2 years of professional working experience, or they need to have an advanced degree in master's. But a lot of the times, most of the jobs or the works that they will be doing here does not require them to, you know, possess a master's degree. And a lot of the entry-level jobs don't even really match with their previous work, relevant work experience. So these very outdated and strict immigration rules should definitely be abandoned. And the government should also recognize that there is need for, you know, influx of foreign talents because of the exodus of Taiwanese talents to other parts of the world. So if Taiwan wants to be competitive, that's the first part. And I also think that the second thing that they need to consider is to really, I think, free up the financial market. Because again, there are, as of now, the rules and regulations about banks and how foreigners can sign up for bank accounts here are so strict and unreasonable a lot of the time, you know, most of the time, that unless they have employment, like full-time employment by a locally registered company, a lot of the foreigners will not be able to sign up for a local bank account, or they will not qualify for a local credit card. And they will have to continue to use their credit card from back home. And that really, I think, would discourage people from, thinking or hoping to settle down. So, like, these are, I think, aspects that they definitely need to think about and, you know, as they move forward, and whether they are really serious and interested in, you know, like, improving Taiwan's overall, like, status. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how this all plays out. Many more people know about Taiwan. I think it'll rise as a destination for a lot of these companies looking for a regional hub. So it will be, I certainly hear what you're saying about the administration could maybe make it a little bit easier for people to relocate there, and then also to encourage some of this activity as well. Well, I really thank you for coming on, William. Before I let you go, is there anything else you want our listeners to know?
No, I think we cover most of the stuff, you know, most of the important stuff and the discussions that have been going on in this region, in this part of the world. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, it was great to hear your thoughts. I appreciate your perspective as someone who's worked in the Taiwanese media for a while, and I'm looking forward to some of these trends continuing out and hopefully a more positive and brighter media future for Taiwan.
Thank you for having me on again.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's all for today. I'd like to thank our guest William Yang for coming on the show. William can be found on Twitter at the handle @WilliamYang120. I'd also like to thank the members of our podcast team, Nick Haggerty, Yu Chen Lai, and Brian Hui. Until next time, this is your host, Garrett D., and thank you for listening to Radio New Bloom. Good night, Taiwan.